Extension 720 here on WGN. John Hansen in for Justin Kaufman here for the next 3 hours. And thank you so much for listening here. And we're going to have a really good show in store. And I wanted to say, before she gets our first guest on the line, a very happy hello to Vivian Leneau. Vivian, how you doing here today?
Hey, how's it going?
I'm excited because it's the first time we've got a chance to work together.
Know.
You've been here at the station for a couple months now. And I'm filling in here and there all over the place. So it's great to work with you, Producer Viv.
Yes, it's great to be here.
And how do we say it in Greek the proper way?
Paraskevi.
Paraskevi.
And you said it perfectly.
I said it perfectly, but it took me 10 tries to get your last name right.
Which means Friday.
Friday, yes.
Oh,
hey,
yeah.
Happy wishings to that. All right, you'll go ahead and get Heather Sharon, our first guest out. And Andrea Darlis,
hey,
how are you doing this
John,
evening?
We're reunited again. Last time we were on the show, you were a guest on the reporter show.
Yeah, I was sitting across from where I was now, and you were in here, which is a great show. And we'll continue, of course, right, Andrea? I know you've had some news, and you're doing some cool things coming up with the U of I. But
for sure, we'll talk about it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, don't jump right on it. I actually was just down at the U of I visiting some of the former students, just chatting through and visited WPGU, our former haunts, and then the College of Media. Had a great conversation with Robin Kaler, and I left there.
Robin is going to be my new boss.
Oh, well, she's a great boss to have. She is the Chancellor of Public Affairs down there.
And John, she was my first boss and my first real job after PGU.
Really?
Yep.
Oh, that's cool.
So it's come full circle. It's crazy.
What a great university to work for and a cool gig coming up. We got a great show for the next 3 hours. It is jam-packed. We're going to kind of talk in this first hour about the changing of the guards in Chicago. It feels appropriate today. It almost feels like we're continuing to change the guard from winter to spring ever so slowly as we're dragging the season on. But we're going to be talking, of course, about Mayor-elect Lori Lightfoot and the changes that'll be going on. But some big news today outside of the aldermanic wards, where we officially called some elections, including the race where Deb Mell, who replaced her father years ago, officially loses her race. She's going to challenge again, and might have another recount. Heather Sharon's going to back us up and tell us all about that. And then a little bit later, we're going to have Howard Tolman on. It's a familiar name here in Chicago, CEO of 1871, works over at IATT right now, and has always been a figure here in Chicago as a businessman. And I want to get his perspective based on conversations I've had with him in the past about what he's loved about what Mayor Emanuel has done and whether Lori Lightfoot will be as good for business as Mayor Emanuel has been, at least according to Howard Tolman. That'll be coming up a little bit later on. We're going to talk about the Avengers and the spoiler alerts out there. And then a little bit later, I have got the craziest historical fact that is going to blow your mind. I cannot wrap my head around it. If you like history, even if you don't, even if you like anything about generations past, it is going to, I won't tease it anymore because I'm going to give it away, but that'll be just a little bit later on. But as promised, we're jumping on with Heather Sharon. Heather Sharon of the DailyLine.net. Heather, it's so good to talk with you.
Hi, John. How are you?
Good. You're no stranger to this program as well. Me and Justin have your name on Rolodex pretty quickly, ready to go.
You guys are very kind.
Yeah, how have the last couple of weeks been? Have you recovered a little bit from some crazy election cycle that we had here in Chicago?
It has been crazy, and I think what made it so crazy was right after Lori Lightfoot got elected, we went straight into the huge debate over the Lincoln Yards TIF and the development and sort of Rahm Emanuel running as hard as he can for as long as he can until he leaves office. So there's been no rest for the wicked, I will tell you that.
Yeah, we had that brief, odd 2-day delay in the vote, but then it went through as expected. And where are we at with that now? Because, you know, a lot of people say, oh, done deal, but some neighborhood organizations are saying, pump the brakes a little bit.
So it is a done deal. However, today, two groups, the Grassroots Collaborative and Illinois Raise Your Hand, went to court to block the subsidy for Lincoln Yards. So it is uncharted legal territory, so it's not clear, I think, to anybody if that will be a successful suit, but it certainly has the possibility of sort of slowing it down if, in fact, a judge rules that it can move forward. The other thing that we'll be watching closely is after Mayor Lightfoot takes office on May 20th, she has promised to sort of, you know, break out the red pencils and make sure that the letter and the spirit of the agreement is being lived up to by developer Sterling Bay. So we'll be watching to see if she takes steps to either, you know, change the the approvals or to sort of make sure, you know, to make sure that they're being lived up to. So it'll be a continuing story for sure.
Heather, I know you guys are on top of everything there, and I like to think that I am, but I've got to admit something to you is when we were wrapping up and talking about all the Lincoln Yard stuff, we started talking about the 78, and I almost had to fake it a little bit. This development project, did it sneak under the radar? Did Lincoln Yards just take up all the print in the paper? I when I looked it up, I'm like, this is a big project, too. This is huge.
Right. It's actually $7 billion, a full $1 billion bigger than Lincoln Yards. It's 10,000 new homes, and Lincoln Yards is a paltry 6,000 units.
Right.
So the issue is that Lincoln Yards is in an area of the city that's much more densely populated. So you've got the beloved Hideout Bar right next to where Lincoln Yards will be built. So it's just a more populated area, whereas the 78 is going to be built on land between the South Loop and Chinatown, right along the river, in a part of the city that people don't really even know it's there because it's an old rail yard that hasn't been used for decades.
If you go up to the top of Willis and you look south, you're like, what is that giant patch of green there? Or brown,
exactly,
green with a few railroad tracks. So they're going to build, they call it the 78 because they're going to propose it as, right now we have 77 distinct neighborhoods officially, and they want to make this the 78th.
That's right. That's their whole marketing plan. And what's interesting is that there's supposed to be a new sort of U of I campus on this land, Discovery Partners Institute, which is supposed to serve a sort of like a business incubator to keep sort of high-tech firms to come and stay in Illinois rather than, you know, fleeing for Silicon Valley and, you know, taking their famous inventions elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a real priority of former Governor Bruce Rauner and Mayor Rahm Emanuel. So it'll be interesting to see whether that moves forward to fruition now that we are in the post-Rauner and soon to be in the post-Emanuel era.
All
Can
right.
I just pop in with that, too, you guys? Hey, Heather, it's Andrea. And Heather, former guest on The Reporters as well, so she's just a rock star. But this, what is so amazing about the 78, I think, is this partnership between the University of Illinois and the University of Chicago and Northwestern as well. It's unprecedented that three of the top institutions in the state partner like this to, as Heather said, keep these projects in Illinois and hopefully create cures for diseases and advance modern medicine in a way that we've never seen it before right here in the South Loop.
Yeah, and it relies on $500 million in state funds that actually was included in Rauner's last budget but never spent because, of course, you know, they haven't started building anything. And what's interesting is that J.B. Pritzker has proposed changing how that money gets spent. Essentially, the nonprofit partners with this deal will have to raise $500 million before the state will release its matching funds. And there's some concern that that could slow progress down because I don't know about you, but $500 million is a lot of money to go out and raise, so we'll be keeping a very close eye on how that all turns out.
Especially when everybody that you can think of in every municipality in the area is in the red for the most part, especially the key players involved in this. Heather, I wanted to ask about Deb Mell and the latest out of the 33rd Ward. This is not only a historic loss if it does get finalized as such and the dust settles on it, in that the Mells have been there for a very long time. It's also interesting who the new candidate or who the new alderman is going to be, a Democratic Socialist and not the lone one on the city council.
No, that's right. So this is a little piece of Chicago history fading into the history books if this result holds. It's important to note that Deb Mell is losing by only 13 votes. So put a pin in this conversation, come back to it, listen to it the next time anybody says, oh, my vote's not going to count, I'm not going to bother to go to the polling place. 13 votes is about as close as it can get. And if it holds, it means that Rosana Rodriguez-Sanchez will be the next alderman of the 33rd Ward, which includes parts of Albany Park and the Northwest Side. And she will be one of six members of the city council to be and he's backed or aligned with the Democratic Socialists of America. And that is a huge increase because right now there's only one member of the city council who is also a member of DSA, and that's 35th Ward Alderman Carlos Ramirez Rosa.
All right, so let's put the brakes on this. Okay, so we got the official tally of 13. Was that just the official counting after all the mail-in ballots were counted or absentee ballots? And now is Deb Mel asking for an official recount, or has there already been some form of recount?
Well, it gets a little complicated from here on out. So all of the votes have been counted at this point. Mail ballots, provisional ballots, ballots by mail, ballots from the space station, all of the counting is done. What happens tomorrow is that the Chicago Board of Elections Commissioners will meet and they will proclaim the results and they will become official at that point. And then Deb Mel has said she will ask what's technically called a discovery recount. So her and her team can go and count up to 25% of all of the votes that were cast on April 2nd. And then she'll be able to see, well, were there mistakes? You know, does that change the total? What am I looking at here? And at that point, her team can decide whether to go ahead and ask a judge to order a full recount. So
strange.
We're sort of two steps away from getting to a recount. Unlike in other states, like people are very familiar with Florida, there's no automatic recount margin trigger in Chicago or Illinois election laws.
That's strange. We're not talking about that many votes. I mean, it's an aldermanic race. I'm trying to find the totals on the whim here.
It's like 11,000.
It's 11,000.
Like, yeah.
Why, if you're going to count a quarter, I'm just count them all, but I guess it's just the procedures in which a recount, you say there's no automatic one, so that's just the way
right.
They got to do it, I guess.
Right. That's just how it's worked. And would be the first discovery recount since 2012.
Is that a race you covered, right?
It is. No, I covered it a little bit.
The 45th?
It was actually a state rep race.
Oh, okay.
Where Will Guzzardi was trying to unseat Maria Barrios and fell a little bit short, about 175 votes short. So he asked for a discovery recount. Now, what's interesting is that he came back 2 years later and beat Maria Barrios. So, sometimes you got to try a couple of times before you make your way into city politics.
So I mentioned the John Arena one, the 45th. How many votes was that one separating those two?
So in 2011, he won office by 29 votes.
So this is even slimmer than that.
Yeah, and it's not in. And there's also another really close race in the 46th Ward. Alderman James Kappelman today declared victory over scientist Marianne Lalonde with a margin of 25 votes.
Jeez.
So it's also possible that Marianne Lalonde will ask for a discovery recount in that race, although she hasn't said anything publicly. And then there's the 5th Ward race, again, where Alderman Leslie Harrison is leading activist Will Calloway by about 176 votes. Will Calloway has said he will ask for a discovery recount and then plans to pursue a full recount. So the election is over, and yet it continues.
Yes, exactly.
The story that keeps on giving.
Yeah, and then yes. And then it'll be a news cycle coming on. Heather, I'm going to have you hold on right there. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and then I want to break down everything that has to do with Lori Lightfoot coming into office next month here on Extension 720 on WGN. Okay, hello, friends. John Hansen in for Justin Kaufman here on Extension 720. So happy you decided to join part of your Wednesday night here with us, tackling a bunch of different topics here. And the first one we're kind of covering is like this changing landscape in Chicago politics. And we're joined by Heather Sharone on the Daily Line. Heather, you know, maybe it's, you know, we overreact to trends all the time. That's a quintessential thing that we do, whether it's on media or in the newspapers and columns and such. But man, we mentioned that one Democratic Socialist aligned alderman now potentially up to six. There's definitely this trend, and it started well before President Trump, but has continued through this very anti-incumbent flavor. Is this something that you see, and I know it's hard to prognosticate into a crystal ball or anything, is this part of a growing wave of change, or is this something, you know, these things kind of yo-yo back and forth over time?
Well, this was definitely a change election. You saw that with the contest between Lori Lightfoot and Tony Preckwinkle really being decided on who was best equipped to bring progressive change to the city council and city hall. And there was no doubt that a number of aldermen capitalized on that. There appears to be 12 new aldermen. It's not a record, but more of those new aldermen are millennials and are Latino than ever before. And that will really change the makeup of the city council after the new term starts next month.
It's interesting because it's a great early on when you're a freshman and you come in with a lot of promises. I think activists make great candidates. They don't always make great legislators because they've made a lot of promises along the way. And I think that you look at some aldermen, you know, being a one-term alderman is probably, I mean, the norm is that you get these aldermen that become part of the quote-unquote machine. They get to know their constituents and they can stay no matter whether they're indicted or not. But there's a lot of pressure on these freshman aldermen, especially in these changing neighborhoods.
Absolutely. You saw even Lori Lightfoot, her victory speech on election night made really sweeping promises about the change she promised to bring City Hall. And the alderman has campaigned as well, you know, on no little promises. In fact, you saw six aldermen during the Lincoln Yards debate, which we were talking about a little bit early, protesting and blocking traffic outside City Hall while that debate was going on inside the chambers. And if that's not an illustration of the change that's about to sweep over City Hall, I think that's it. The question is, can those aldermen take that sort of energy and passion and bring it into City Hall and use it to get things done? Because you can't do anything as a single alderman. You've got to find 25 others to vote with you, and that is much easier said than done, especially in a system that is as confusing and circuitous and rife with challenges as Chicago's city government is.
Yeah, and being alderman, I think 90% of the job and what ends up getting you reelected is your constituency services. It's the non-sexy part of politics, but it's what you got to be really good at.
Absolutely. And these aldermen, for many of the new ones, this is their first elected a position in elected office or political office. So they're very quickly not only going to figure out how to build coalitions around the issues that matter to them, but also they're going to be responsible for delivering services to a ward of about 50,000 people. And that's everything from, hey, I need a new garbage can because the squirrels chewed through my old garbage can.
Right.
And or the street light is out and I need it replaced. And also there is a house on my block that I think drug dealers have moved into. And hey, can you help? And that's a wide range of skills that you've got to be able to either handle yourself or hire a staff with a very limited budget to deal with. And in the past, newly elected aldermen haven't been novices. They've come up through a ward organization or they've come up through the Democratic Party, so they've known sort of how things work. But for example, if Rosanna Rodriguez Sanchez does defeat Deb Mel, she's going to come into office not have been being a part of that 33rd ward Democratic organization, and is going to come in really fresh for good or for ill in terms of both getting legislation passed, but also delivering ward services.
And you imagine the stalwarts in the neighborhood, the movers and shakers aligned with Deb Mel. I don't want to speak blankly across the whole board, but anyone that was part of it is supporter of Deb Mel may not join in to help out. Of course, if you know how to scratch everyone's back, it helps out. Heather, we got to get going, but I just want to leave you the final word here. We didn't talk too much about Mayor Lightfoot. We talked about her in the past. The biggest change you anticipate in how City Hall is going to run, or the biggest, I guess, challenge on day one facing her as she gets started?
Well, I think she's got to figure out whether she's really going to move to strip aldermen of their power to have the final say on projects in their ward. She's promised that she will make changes to that, but I don't doubt that she has run into a bit of a brick wall as she starts to make her plans. So that's what I am breathlessly anticipating as she gets ready to take off.
Heather Cerrone, thank you so much for stopping on by here. Go enjoy the night, okay?
I sure will. Thanks for having me, John.
And Heather, of course, the editor at thedailyline.net. Quick break, the news on Extension 720.
Follow me into the jungle.
Thank you very much, Andrea. Extension 720, John Hansen here for Justin Kaufman. I'll be hanging out with you till about 10 o'clock this evening. And love for you to join the conversation on the text line or the talk line, 312-981-7200. But onto the phone lines we go with a very special guest here today. I've chatted with him a couple times before, Howard Tolman, the leader of the Ed Kaplan Family Institute for Innovation at Tech Entrepreneurship at ITT, or IIT, excuse me. And Howard, you join me on the line. Now, Howard, I hope we're not interrupting a big dinner for you or anything like that.
No, I was just I just finished with the flash mob at the Bean, and I just I just want to chat with you, and
yeah, so
looking forward to it.
Yeah, well, Howard, we last met, I think it was about a year ago, maybe a little over a year ago. We kind of co-hosted a show for Scott Catoon at the last minute, talking about tech and business, and you and I talked a little bit about the mayoral race, but at the time, we didn't know that Mayor Emanuel, or at least even if you knew, you didn't tell us, that Mayor Emanuel would not be seeking another term. And we talked about the mayor's influence, Mayor Emanuel's influence on a global scale, and he's traveled the world. You've traveled with him on different occasions. All right, so now we have Mayor-elect Lori Lightfoot. What are your reactions, first as a person and as a Chicagoan and as a businessman?
Well, I think, honestly, I mean, I think that we don't know, and you know, we're all optimistic in the sense that we hope she does well. It's a huge job. You know, I thought one of the interesting lines coming out of the campaign was the mayor's office is not really an entry-level job, but I hope, you know, look, you got to wish her well. It's our city. We want, you know, we want the city to be successful. And, you know, from the standpoint of the tech and the business community, this was not a topic of much conversation during the campaign. And so we're hopefully sort of waiting to see some of the stuff, you know, that she's talked about, and some of the signaling has been good. I mean, you know, I think that if she would have postponed the Lincoln Yards and the related projects, I think that would have been a really bad signal.
I was talking to Howard Chanick from the Tribune a couple weeks ago about an article he wrote, and there you were all over it, Howard, with some quotes. And I wanted to just have you elaborate on the idea that, and you kind of, you just touched on it now, but the idea of the worry of kind of taking your foot off the gas with some of these things.
I think it's a question of priorities. I mean, if you ask Rahm, if you ask Laurie, frankly, I mean, they would say you have to make choices. And, you know, I think that the way to answer the momentum issue and the choices issue is she needs to move very quickly to get some people around her who can reassure these various constituencies. And it's not limited to the business and tech community. I mean, look, we depend to a tremendous amount on tourism, 55 million people. We depend on corporate relocations. And a lot of these things all go to the same proposition, which is what kind of assured stability do you have? That's sort of half the question. And the second half of the question that every business is going to be acting and sort of asking about is, you know, how do we know that if the mayor makes a commitment that the mayor can deliver? You know, that used to be not even an issue, you know, for umpteen years under Daley and pretty much under Rahm. But here you have a new, you know, council. You've lost a lot of the senior leaders in the council in terms of the aldermen. You got a new mayor, you know, and the issue is, you know, if the world says, well, let's wait and see for a year or two, that's going to be a slowdown. It is damaging. Hey, yeah, it absolutely is.
Howard, I want to ask, because I think a lot of people frame this as a choice where we could either back corporations in the downtown area, give them the breaks they need to come here, to give the tech industry the funding that it needs and the startup, but that's at the cost of helping neighborhoods build themselves, especially some of our neighborhoods that need the help. I would imagine, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but these things don't have to be mutually exclusive, right? I mean, we can kind of tackle these things together.
Well, I think that the problem that people miss, and I think this was what happened in New York, frankly, too, is, you know, you don't grow an economy by taxes, especially the way our taxes presently are, and you don't grow it by, you know, charity. You grow it by growing business. I mean, business is what pays the bills. And so I think that you have to continue to grow the business and the revenues of the city in order to be able to afford to make the other clearly important investments. I mean, one of the things that we fought about all the time, even with Rahm, was, you know, he was like, well, I'd like to have a version of 1871, you know, which was a tech incubator, the number one in the world. I'd like to have it a version in most of the neighborhoods. And we're like, you know, some things require critical mass, and you just can't have, you know, take 40 unused firehouses and turn them into mini incubators and think that that's going to serve the community. And in fact, some of the latest commentary about some of Laurie's, you know, ideas around, you know, investing in and supporting small businesses in throughout the city, not just in terms of downtown. The fact is that small businesses aren't what's growing. What's growing are new businesses. And new businesses are a different set of challenges than trying to figure out how to make the city a little more responsive to businesses that need a certain kind of license or a certain kind of signage. And by the way, I mean, the Emanuel administration prides itself probably on eliminating a zillion different regulations and, you know, obstacles and things like that. So I'm just a little wary that, as you said, it's really not an either or. You know, we don't have to make bad choices. I think we can be creative and we can serve all these needs. And of course, you know, you got to look to the governor as well to help out. And specifically, you know, one of the big things that really is a sort of south of the loop project is this whole thing around related and what's called DPI, which is a huge thing that, Governor Rauner committed to the tune of about $500 million. JB's position has been, you know, if the private sector can raise a bunch of money, then maybe he'll honor the state's commitment in that regard. Not exactly what right. you want to hear.
Right.
But you know, and also there's always the issue of, hey, it was the last guy's pet project, so I want to get as far away from it as I can. But look, we're a city that continues to be innovative. You know, this is a city of a million firsts. And, you know, it's interesting because when you look back, you know, we had the first immigrant mayor, we had the first female mayor, we had the first African-American mayor, we had the longest serving mayor in terms of Mayor Daley. Rahm was the first Jewish mayor. Laurie's probably a trifecta. You know, I don't know if, you know, which of the things she is most focused on, but, you know, she's certainly the first African-American, you know, woman in right. terms of mayors. And that's the kind of place this is, you know, and so we figure it out. You know, this, I like to say that today the present has never been more temporary. It's
right.
like, okay, well, that was today, and what have you done for me, you know, lately, because now it's tomorrow. But, you know, go ahead.
You know, you kind of floated the idea of, unlike what happened in New York. Are you referring to the Amazon HQ pullout?
Yeah, I think that you had some very limited number of local politicians who said, we're going to make your life miserable. And, you know, they didn't understand that, you know, when you're talking about 25 or 30,000 jobs, the effect of that, you know, on your economy and on a lot of people's lives is pretty substantial. And, you know, very few of these, you know, TIF arrangements or concessions. I mean, there wasn't a city in the country that didn't make pretty dramatic concessions to Amazon. But that was only sort of half the problem. The other problem was they made it very clear that they weren't going to be welcoming. And I think this is going to be an issue for a lot of the Midwestern cities. You know, one of the exciting things that happened in the last few months is Silicon Valley companies have started to relocate their headquarters into Chicago because of the talent issue, which is you can't get people on the West Coast, you can't afford them, and then they can't afford housing out there. Mm-hmm. So they're starting to say, what markets are better places in terms of quality of life, in terms of opportunities for growth? So that's why you have Salesforce and Facebook and Google and all these companies committing to substantial growth here. Couldn't be better for our economy or for the city. And so that's, you know, that's very encouraging too. I mean, we're a diverse city. You know, we don't have a single dominant industry. It's not like finance on the East Coast or entertainment on the West Coast. We've got, you know, all these different sectors that contribute to the economy. So, all of that is a pretty, you know, easy story to tell. You just want to be sure you're not, you know, telling the wrong story.
Well, that's what I was just going to ask, Howard. And we got to, I'll do one question here before we take a quick break. But yes, I think that the story that you tell is compelling. I think a lot of people understand it. But of course, there's this anti-incumbent. There's a rise in Democratic socialists, especially in the party. A lot of people are clamoring for change in how it's done. There's any corporation that gets any tax break comes under increased scrutiny. Maybe scrutiny isn't the worst thing in the world to really analyze these sorts of things. But is it up to politicians and innovators and developers to tell this story better, that even if it creates 25,000 jobs of middle income jobs, that's also going to get working class income jobs coming into the area too? Are we not telling the story the right way?
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. In fact, it's probably 3-1. I think most of the math was, if Amazon brought 50,000 jobs over the course of what they were talking about, and by the way, they were distributed across every income level. They, you know, somehow one of the things they screwed up on day one was to get sucked into the average job is $100,000.
Right.
You know, in order to get to an average job, you got to have both ends of that, and you got to have a lot of that. But the multiplier effect was like 3-for-1. It would probably have generated another 120,000 jobs at every other level of economy and support. So, you know, you've got that issue. And then I think the biggest thing is the tech companies, you're exactly right. I mean, they live within themselves. I mean, they live in this bubble. And I don't think that they've invested enough time in laying the groundwork and understanding that you've got to, connect to the community and to all of the constituencies. You know, one of the things Blair Kamen said, who's, you know, the architecture critic for the Trib, I believe, you know, he said that Lincoln Yards, you know, from the renderings, looks like somebody parachuted in from outer space, an entire downtown's, you know, little pod.
Kind of looks like Soldier Field when they redid it. Like, where did this come from?
Well, who stuck that on there?
Right.
Yeah, so, I mean, making it fit and being respectful and responsive to the community is pretty essential. And I don't think that a lot of these big companies understand that they have to sort of address those issues.
Yeah, they do.
As really part of the package.
Yeah, they do. Howard, we're going to take a quick commercial break. You don't mind staying on the line for just a little longer, do you?
No, happy to do it.
All right, Howard Tolman, former CEO of 1871. We mentioned his credentials earlier. Quick break and more on Extension 720. Extension 720, John Hansen in for Justin Kaufman till 10 o'clock. Thanks so much for spending part of your Wednesday evening with us. We still got Howard Tolman on the line. Howard, we call that bumping music here in the business. If we were to let you pick your own kind of song to get into a Howard Tolman segment, we'll put it down for the next time we chat. What would you pick? Who are you picking?
You know, I go with a song called Tub Thumpers by Chumbawamba, or whatever that Chumbawamba. You know, it's the one about I get knocked down.
No,
yes,
Chumbawamba.
Can you sing a little bit for us, Howard, or what?
Yeah, it's an entrepreneur's song. It's I get knocked down, you know, and then,
but I get up again.
I get down.
Yeah. Howard, I didn't think this would come up in our conversation, but I appreciate you for playing along. All right, so you mentioned for Lori Lightfoot, do you want her to hire advisors that can help her outreach to all sorts of different communities, business or not? Let's say
in part because I think that unlike some of the other candidates, you know, who were a package deal, I mean, I think she didn't have, you know, even an opportunity. I mean, she had like 40 days or something. She didn't have a huge team assembled. I mean, she didn't have a lot of the background that a lot of these other candidates had, and so they could bring with them. And so
I don't know if she entered that race thinking she might win. I really don't. And how could, I mean, it was a real surprise. I mean, good for her. I mean, it's a great story. And as you mentioned, she a lot of firsts in her categories. And not only that, obviously, she destroyed Tony Preckwinkle in the runoff. I mean, it wasn't even close. And now you've got a limited time.
Look, it wasn't close. But I mean, the truth is, and I think, you know, for better or for worse, depending on, you know, which side of the aisle you're on, I mean, I think the Democrats are doing it to themselves already at the national level. And the truth is, what sort of happened here was you had at least two tiers of candidates, and the more experienced tier, 4 or 5 of these people, canceled each other's, you know, each other out. And so you ended up with somebody that nobody expected to even make the bottom line of the cut. And I think everybody was really surprised. Not afterwards. In other words, in the runoff,
yeah,
I think people were, well, look, this is a message about change, and this is a message about business as usual, albeit with experience. But then, you know, I mean, I think that Tony must have woken up under a really dark cloud, because between, you know, Ed Burke and, you know, Kim Fox and two or three of these body blows that she suffered, I don't think anybody was going to win that election.
Yeah, even after we just found out she spent $5 million on it. Okay, Howard, so what I was getting at is Lori Lightfoot calls you. I don't know if she has. Have you talked to her? Have you met Lori Lightfoot?
Yeah.
And she asks, what's the, I'm not saying she has asked or she will, but what's priority number one from a business and tech perspective for her? Is it a matter of just instilling confidence so that no one slows down or says, oh, I'm going to wait and see on Chicago? What's first?
I think priority number one is to say that you don't start disrupting until you learn the lay of the land. And stability is really important. So I think that the most important message is, you know, on day one, you don't try to, you know, you've lost the guy who was the floor leader. Some of the most experienced of the good aldermen are gone. You're going to lose a lot of people that are running city departments if they haven't already left. You've got to say that we're going to keep the wheels on and we're going to keep the basic operation of the city going in order to convince, you know, the outside world that it's not going to be chaotic. I mean, stability is what drives the markets. It's what drives investment. You know, it's pretty much, you know, we tell our startups at 1871, you know, the last thing you want to say to a company, to a customer, is I'm new, I'm innovative, I'm novel, because they don't hear any of those words.
Right.
They hear
risk,
mistakes, reinvestment, new training, cost, all those kinds of things.
Interesting.
So she's got to be careful. You know, it's a message of change. You know, she thinks that the election was a huge endorsement. And it obviously was relative to the choice that was presented. You know, a different question is when two-thirds of the people don't even show up to vote.
Right.
What's the real message?
Right.
You know? I wrote a piece and I said, is this a mandate or is this meh?
Right.
You know, who knows?
Right. No, and it's interesting because I was really rallied up for part one of the election and then I wasn't for part two. And I think a lot of people are falling in that camp, even though it was a three-quarter to one-quarter election result. Howard, last question really quickly. All right, you're issuing a grade to Chicago business and tech. Where are we at right now? You give them an A, give them a B, give them a C? I know it's a really broad question, but just what's the pulse?
No, I mean, we've got some really simple math. I mean, we went from when Rahm came in, tech was about 2% of our economy. Now it's almost 14%. That represents about 165,000 jobs just in the information technology sector. We've raised in startups $1.4 billion in new money. We're the best place in the country for female entrepreneurs to build their businesses. So I would tell you that the tech community is hitting it out of the park, and you know it's only going to be more so because the next 5 years are going to be about technology-centric businesses. We're not going to have dog and cat, you know, pet dating sites, and we're not going to have too many more services that are going to come out and brush your teeth for you, but we're going to have telemedicine and cybersecurity and machine learning and all of these. The core is technology. So I think that there's no end in terms of what's going on, and I'm very, very optimistic about that. We just have the city to basically either lead or get out of the way, and either one would be perfectly fine with us.
Well, we're going to get out of your way so you can go home and listen to some Chumbawamba, okay, Howard?
All right.
Actually, I have some. Let's play
it, Howard.
Wait a second.
All right.
Hold on, Howard. I got you.
Hold on. Here it comes.
There you go. Yeah.
That was your chance, Howard, to sing along, but it wasn't the karaoke version.
Thank you.
Me and you will do some karaoke to that soon, okay?
All right, super.
Thanks,
Thank
Howard.
You.
Appreciate
Talk
the time.
Soon. Bye-bye.
All right, quick break and then more on Extension 720. 720 WGN, this is Extension 720. Justin Kaufman with the night off tonight. John Hanson here filling in until 10 o'clock. Thanks so much for listening on in. Andrea, right as you were reading the Cubs score, Javi Baez just hit a homer to right.
Oh, yes.
6-0 Cubbies. Man,
yeah.
I swear, any struggling team like the Cubs, you know, they didn't start the year off so great. A trip to Miami to play the Marlins seems to be what every team should be legally prescribed to do
exactly.
In a slump. It cures what ails you, which actually offers a nice transition into our segment talking about medical marijuana, the benefits of that, and a great festival that's actually coming up this weekend called Waldo's Forever Fest. So I got two people on the phone line, which is always such a tightrope of fun, talking to two people, three people in three different rooms. Right. But I got to thank Richard Park from Chicago Cannabis Alliance and Scott Kramer from Do312, which are the event event organizers. Gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here.
Hi, thanks for having us.
Yep, there we go. That'll be the last time. I'll call you on you one at a time. Guys, thanks so much for joining us. Richard, I hope you could start and let us know, what is the Chicago Cannabis Alliance? What do you guys do?
So we're a 501c3 nonprofit, and our goal is to increase education and help patients gain access to medical cannabis, because sometimes the legal framework in states can be a little bit difficult for patients to navigate.
I went to your website, chicagocannabis.org, and it's a really simple and easy-to-use navigation tool. It answers some quick questions. And then there's a form below where you can probably get more information or help you get your card. Is that really what you're trying to do, is kind of connect the dots from point A to point Z to help people get what they need?
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely part of what we do. The other thing is we help with, kind of financial burdens for patients, and we help educate physicians. So we do a lot of clinical presentations. We've done them for Illinois Masonic, Northwestern Neurology, Northwestern Integrative, et cetera, because a lot of doctors aren't quite sure as to the practical applications of cannabis.
Has the stigma gone away considerably over the last few years?
I mean, it's a little bit tougher to describe. I think, yeah, the stigma is starting to fade, but one of the things that we've always realized is that the general population is always way ahead of our government. And so as far as Chicago residents, Illinois residents, they've been very supportive of not only medical cannabis, but adult use cannabis for quite a while now.
Mm-hmm.
And we're just simply waiting for the government to catch up.
When you deal with, obviously we're talking about medical marijuana, or medical cannabis is the legal option here in Illinois. Do you advocate for full recreational use? Is that a whole different, is that not part of your organization's goals, missions? You'll cross that bridge when you get to it. How do you play in that role in that discussion?
So we don't actively advocate yet for adult use, but we do believe that adult use for cannabis is the future and the best kind of option. Obviously, these sorts of things tend to begin with medical cannabis and then decriminalization, which is really important. The social justice aspect really can't be ignored and shouldn't be ignored, in our opinion. We do advocate for full recreational use of cannabis, but we don't have any avenues of which we're actually doing that yet.
It's interesting. You said recreational there. I said it first, and then you said adult use. Is that a more? I don't want to say PC, but is that more of a way you guys are trying to describe what legal marijuana use is, adult use, just to emphasize that you're not advocating for 14 and 15 year olds doing this. You're talking about adults being able to use this.
Absolutely, that's definitely part of it. We're trying to part of eliminating the stigma and helping people be more open to it is changing a little bit of the rhetoric that surrounds it. A lot of the things that we say, even terms like marijuana and recreational, these are terms that were devised to describe something that already existed.
Mm-hmm.
One of the examples we always use is if physicians surveyed their patients, what they would find is a very, very high percentage of patients who are self-medicating using cannabis, oftentimes for years. We don't think it does any benefit to scold and pretend it doesn't exist. And we say adult use because a lot of what's happening is adult patients who are going to consume cannabis recreationally, quote-unquote, But in fact, what they're doing is self-medicating for things that Western medicine hasn't fully explained yet.
Interesting. So we put them in a camp of recreational, but in fact, it may be medicinal, but amateur medicinal, and it's a way better way to do it in a medically professional way, I guess you could say.
Yeah, exactly. And, when you get into a regulatory framework, what happens is state-mandated testing for pesticides, mycotoxins, molds, residual solvents, a lot of the stuff that people acquire off of the black market is untested. And I've rarely heard a black market distributor throw anything away because he felt it wasn't up to snuff.
Right. Hey, Scott, you did a really good job staying quiet there on the line while I was talking to Richard. And, well, Richard, I'll have a few more questions for you as well. But, Scott, why don't you walk us through Waldo's Forever Fest?
Yeah, for sure. So this is our second year. Richard and I worked on it. Our first year was last year. Saw about 1,500 people come out for it. I'll walk through a little bit of this year and what to expect, and then I'm going to hand it back to Richard to talk about the origin of Waldo's, because I think that that's an important piece of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he speaks to it a lot better than I do, so I don't want to steal his thunder on that one.
Oh, don't worry. We won't steal it. It'll be the thunder will be held. So it's a Saturday, right? Which obviously makes sense. 420.
It is, yeah. So it's always been on 420. Last year was on Friday, and we saw about 1,500 people out for it. This year, it's going to be on a Saturday, so we're expecting around, I'd say, at minimum 3,000 people. We have a lot of things, coming to our benefit this year with 420 fun out falling on a Saturday. We also have some great weather ahead of us.
Yeah, you're lucky enough for Saturday. Yeah. So is it informational? Yeah. Is it entertainment? A combination of both? What do people expect when they walk up to Argyle and Clark?
It's a little bit of everything. There's going to be a lot of information and education that's going to be set up. There's going to be about 20 booths with different giveaways and different sort of experiences, whether it be fun or educational. We're going to have a lush entryway that's provided by Cresco that's going to have a photo booth with the Waldos. We're going to have a modern chill lounge that is provided by Verano. We're going to have some live glass blowing, a couple of food trucks. We're also going to have a pop-up arcade by Grassroots that'll have 8 to 12 full-size arcade games that are going to be set to free play. And then we're going to have a lot of talent. We have a national headliner who went a little bit harder on talent this year. So Big Frida is going to be headlining, who's cut tracks with artists like Beyonce, Drake, RuPaul, just to name a few. And then a cast of locals, Tatiana, Hazel, Air Credits, White Mystery, Akasha. We're going to have comedy sets by Maureen San Diego, Rachel Relman, and then we're going to have Dragon Burlesque by Lucy Stuhl, Ramona Slick, and then a few DJ sets by All the Way K and Jill Hopkins.
It's pretty stacked up. It seems like it's an entertaining way to get the community involved and to learn some things about what you're doing, but I imagine it's a great way to get dispensaries to actually get a chance to chat with consumers because they're limited, and I don't know, maybe this is a Richard question or a Scott question, but dispensaries are limited in what they can do to advertise to potential patients, right? Either one.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. We have a lot of different regulatory framework, and it changes state to state. So it's a little bit different everywhere. Not only is this a great way to reach the patient population, but it's a super targeted way to do so. Almost everybody who's going to attend this festival is interested in cannabis. And although that seems apparent in the world of advertising, that is a super targeted demographic.
Yeah.
So we think it will be effective, and the cultivators are actually really great about doing steam distillation demonstrations and educating the consuming public, and that's really what they're there for, because this isn't a consumption event. It's more of an appreciation for the culture that came before us and the culture that we built ourselves on. And also to show appreciation for our customer base.
And this is not to make light of it, but what you said, not a consumption event. So this isn't something that you're going to go and you're going to see a haze of smoke or whatever stereotypical thing you could throw at what you think is going to happen at a fest to do cannabis. Obviously, public consumption of medical marijuana, illegal, of course, in Illinois.
Yeah, it is prohibited. I hope you don't see any of the stoner stereotypes that people
right.
are used to. And I say that in the most endearing way. I began in this industry in 1998 in California. And have moved my way east. I'm originally from the Uptown neighborhood. Moved my way east as the industry has kind of progressed. And you know, we're trying to kind of overturn the old ways. One of the first things that I noticed in Colorado when it first legalized in 2011, I believe, was that when you walk into the lines in these dispensaries, and you'll see the same thing at Dispensary 33, you'll see the same thing at the Waldo's Fest. You could not peg who is a stoner and who is not,
mm-hmm.
right? It's such a wide cross-segment of the population. That's why we've always had really difficult time trying to gauge what the consumption rates are. But according to, Pew 2 years ago, their latest poll, at least 51% of Americans admit to having tried cannabis at least once in their life. And that's a survey with people just barely trying to admit. The real number, I would say, go out and ask your friends. I think people have a
right.
pretty good idea.
Right, exactly. I'm going to go around the circle in this radio, but no, I'm just kidding. I'm not going to do that. A few people got little wide eyes here, but maybe we'll do that afterwards. Guys, I'm going to take a quick commercial break, but I do want to hear about the origins of Waldo's and also of 420. I had no idea where that came from. So you guys stay on the line right there. Quick break on Extension 720 and more after this on WGN. It tells me it's home. But I- And this is Extension 720. John Hanson in for Justin Kaufman until 10 o'clock. Thanks so much for joining us. Talking about living healthy in just a bit, we're going to have Roberto Gennaro on to talk about how to have a great diet, what diet is a good diet, and all sorts of living healthy things. So if you got questions about your diet or someone else's diet, about your age, anything like that, what you need to do, 312-981-7200. Start getting those questions in via the text line. We'll take some calls, too, as well. Before that, we're going to finish up our segment here talking about medical marijuana and a really cool festival happening this weekend, the Waldo's Forever Fest. Richard Park and Scott Kramer still on the line. So, Richard, Waldo's Forever Fest, what are the origins? What does that mean?
Yeah, so the Waldos are a group of high school kids from the 1970s in Northern California who used to meet up at 420 every day to kind of medicate themselves. Mm-hmm. These guys eventually become roadies for the Grateful Dead. While they're on tour with the Dead, Jerry Garcia finds out that they're meeting at 420 every day because a lot of the stage crew is starting to do this. And then Jerry Garcia, the Grateful Dead, run with it, and the rest is history. This is where the terminology for 420 comes from, for 420 p.m. when these guys would meet. There's a lot of urban lore surrounding what that term is. I've heard people say, oh, it's a police code, different things like that. And I've never encountered a police officer who said that was a code that they used. So, yeah, you know, one of the reasons we wanted to call it Waldo's Forever is because I've seen the evolution of this industry, and I don't want to ever forget that it was built on the backs of people that we now call criminals. So, you know, a lot of the decriminalization and the forgiving of old possession marijuana charges and things like that, it's in light of that. We don't ever want to forget where the industry came from and what a massive misstep that it has been.
Yeah, you bring up a really good point, Richard. I think that when we talk about stoner culture, I'm putting that in big quotes, and, you know, the chuckle, oh, we're going to see a bunch of smoke in the air at music festivals. You know, marijuana is this thing that's joked about when it's used, you know, lightly by kids, but there are so many people that are sitting in prison for these charges, some of them for many, many years that shouldn't be, that it is easy to lose sight, I think, of, you know, the important legal ramifications that this has on people's lives.
Yeah, I mean, we completely agree. And I think a lot of times that conversation gets lost in other markets. Illinois is pretty good about remembering the social justice piece, and so is the Bay Area. But for a large part, I mean, anyone who's old enough to remember what it was like in the 90s, in Chicago in particular, it was a very big deal to get caught with $20 worth of marijuana. On mm-hmm. the federal level, it is a Schedule One controlled substance. A Schedule One means zero medicinal value, high likelihood for addiction. Neither of these statements is true when we're talking about cannabis. And it's almost laughable. One of the examples that we always give is in 1988, President Reagan said the greatest single threat we had to America was marijuana use.
At the height of the Cold War.
Of the context. Yeah, exactly. And it's incredibly hyperbolic statement that is easy and obvious for us to recognize today. And I think a lot of us very conveniently look over our attitudes over the past 20, 30 years on it.
Yeah.
The social justice aspect piece cannot be forgotten because we're only talking about marijuana convictions. And, you know, in light of convictions, I do use the term marijuana just to remind people. But
right.
The fact of the matter is if we extrapolate out and how many victims of the drug war began with small-time marijuana possession, the social impact is even greater than any statistics that we've been able to come up with so far. So I really don't want anyone in the public to forget that. And anyone old enough to remember just 5-10 years ago, the landscape, at least legally, has changed quite a bit. And I think we're seeing that change because the general population has made up their mind.
Yep. That's a really well put, Richard. Scott, just really quickly, the what and the where of Waldo's Forever Fest.
The what and the where. It is located at the corner of Argyle Street and Clark Street in the neighborhood of Uptown.
And it's this Saturday, 4:20. And what are the times and what times it get started at?
Yeah, we're opening at 9 a.m. and we're going until 8 p.m. It is free admission for everyone, and we're asking
to be 18 plus to enter.
So, you know, it's interesting. You guys mentioned that it obviously there's a niche there for people that are interested in cannabis, but we're a big street festival city. This is the first one that I know of on the calendar, at least, and the weather's going to be nice. So just hop on the red line to the Argyle stop, wherever you are in the city, walk a couple blocks west, and check it out. Guys, thanks so much for stopping here on Extension 720.
No problem. Thanks for having us.
Absolutely. Okay. More after this here on Extension 720, WGN. This is Extension 720. Normally, you got Justin Kaufman here. He's gone tonight. John Hansen here filling in. And, Andre, I'm going to, I don't know if you saw this when I posted this a couple days ago on Facebook and on Twitter, but I think I'm going to blow everyone's mind here listening to this. I don't know why this is so crazy to me.
Oh, is this really good? It's really good. When he told me, I was like, what?
I'll start from here and walk you through it. So,
okay, good.
John Tyler was our 10th president. His story is interesting enough. He became president after William Henry Harrison died just a month into office. And so he became the first president to inherit becoming the presidency through the death of the current president, which is not where I'm going with this at all. But just as a quick aside, it also caused a constitutional crisis that they had to rewrite and add a new amendment and article to the Constitution to make sure that it was A-OK, that when the president dies, the VP takes over. Anyways. So, John Tyler was born in the year 1790. In fact, just about a month ago, he would have celebrated, if he just made it, 229 years old. So, he lived a long life, and it's almost hard to believe. So, born in 1790, 1 year after our Constitution is ratified in the United States, we're talking powdered wigs, we're talking horse and buggies, mail, there's no Morse code, nothing like that. Andrea and Vivian, John Tyler has two grandchildren still alive.
No kidding.
Isn't that crazy?
That is wild.
He was born 229 years ago, and he has two grandchildren. All my grandparents, God bless them, they've all passed, but they were born in the 19 teens and the early 20s. Which I think for people my age, that's pretty standard. And you're like,
I had a grandfather. My mom's dad was born in 1894.
Okay. And that was your grandfather.
That was my grandfather. Yes.
Now you're a young woman, Andrea.
Oh,
so
thank you,
I know
John.
You're nowhere near the age of these two grandkids.
Right.
But add on another 100 years.
Yeah.
Without adding on a generation, so I'm going to walk you through how this is
like
humanly
how it's possible. Okay.
So because it's just mind blowing to think of a connection to the 18th century just through your grandparents. So. John Tyler, as I mentioned, first vice president elevated to the presidency. CBS did a story on them a couple years ago, but I've checked that they, at least as of a couple of weeks ago, were still alive. Fingers crossed. Because now I'm reading this and I'm getting worried. But so John Tyler, born in 1790, he had a wife early on who passed away tragically in a train accident. He had a second wife. And when John Tyler was 63 years old, he had his last son. So a father at 63, that's pretty old, but I don't think it was all that uncommon in that age.
Right.
Okay, so that son, who was born in 1853, also had a second wife late in life and had their two grandkids when he was in his 70s.
Real? It's like, who was the guy from The Odd Couple?
I don't know.
Tony,
God, it's been a long time.
He had a son, I think he was 75 years old.
Wow. Well, this is about what we're talking about. And then both of these grandchildren are now approaching 90 years old. So it's not even like these grandkids are, I mean, 90 is a nice long life and hopefully they live much longer.
Right.
But it's not like they're 115 and we're like, okay, that makes sense. They're age of a typical grandparent now. So they are connected to John Tyler through two generations. Maybe I'm just a presidential history nerd or a history nerd in general, but that must blow other people's minds. I mean,
it blew my mind.
That's very cool. I mean, to be able to say right now in 2019, my grandpa was one of the earliest presidents of this country.
Yes. Born almost before there was a country.
Yeah, exactly.
We need to get them on the show.
Right. It made me wonder, because I think a lot
of
us...
How old are they, John?
They are 89, I see one of them was, when they did this story.
So and then
in
90?
86. No, I think 89. So I think they're now 90 and 87,
okay.
If I'm correct.
Okay.
I can double check that when I get a second, because I'm never great at Googling while talking on air. But... It's fascinating. It just got me thinking that, you know, I think that we all accumulate random factoids in life that we like to throw it at a dinner party. This is going to be mine forever, by the way. So eventually
so don't
people
take it.
Right. And I don't know how much longer I get to use this one. So
for the same dinner party, I can't use this.
No, you're going elsewhere. So I don't know how many years I got left with this one. 5 or 6, maybe. I mean, hopefully longer, not to make light of it, but
hopefully
they obviously have longevity in their family. It's fascinating. So I wanted to know from y'all, 312-981-7200.
Random crazy
facts. That you might have one, and maybe not. Maybe that's just something that I've gotten over the years. But if you have,
and it has to be one that you just know off the top of your head. Not like you can't look one up.
Yeah, don't look one up, and also make sure you know it's true, because like so many people quote random facts, and then you go on Snopes, and you're like, well, that's not true.
I read one. Okay, here's mine.
Okay.
And it's mindless and ridiculous, and has nothing to do with anything.
Okay,
but I did read one time, and I did Snopes it, that dolphins and humans are the only two species who have sex for pleasure.
What? Okay.
Wow. Not just to like
how
procreate.
Did they find that out? I mean, the humans, I get. There's evidence
exactly
there.
Right? But they went to like, you know, SeaWorld and did an extensive study.
What does that study do? They listen to the and figure out what they're
They watch the one dolphin kind of swim up to the other and go, hey, how you doing?
Right, well, one pulled out a cigarette afterwards, so they knew that must have been pleasurable. Yeah, how do you do that? You know, I didn't.
One said flowers.
Yes. Well, that's a nice one. That's romance.
That's
not lust. That's love, Andrea.
It's for love, for romance, and for pleasure.
So 312-981. Do you have any, Vivian? I know we talked about this before the show, and that's not to put you on the spot. I'll let you think about it too.
There's actually a whole.
If anyone's not familiar with Reddit, it's kind of like the front page of the internet. They call it. It's also a mindless time trap. So beware if you've never been there. But go to Reddit.com, and one of the subsections is a section called "Today I Learned," and it's usually found by people who are just on Wikipedia or on some source, and then they share these facts. And one that came up recently that I never knew, and I'm someone, again, who loves history and stuff like that, I never knew, you know, the Titanic, which of course sank in 1912, was discovered in, I want to say, 1985 by Robert Ballard. I never knew that he was actually working for the U.S. Navy on a secret mission and was given permission to look for the Titanic only after he completed his secret mission. This story of Robert Ballard's been told a million times, but I don't think until recently that those documents had been released fully. Now, that's a little bit mundane and maybe not something that interests more people, but that's just an example of like these useless little things that you can throw out at dinner parties.
Have you heard about how dogs' mouths are cleaner than humans?
I've heard that rumor. Is that true?
Okay,
do we
so
know that?
It's a myth, mm-hmm. but it is true. Dogs' mouths are cleaner.
Wait, it's a myth, but it's true?
But it's true. I know. It's kind of complicated.
Okay.
I've heard that too.
But it's true. They have less germs than humans.
Well, what about the dolphins after they have some fun? With that, I heard also that I saw the study that men's beards are dirtier than a toilet seat.
Oh, yes. I saw that today.
I think that's true. Mine earlier. As soon as I saw that story, I went right to the
imagine ZZ Top.
Yes, exactly.
Wow.
Okay, so if you've got one, great. 312-981-7200. We've also got coming up Roberta Gennaro, who also does a podcast here on WGN Radio.
Yes, she does. I produce it.
Yeah. Oh, shout out to you, Vivian. Right. And we'll talk with her about cool things. So plenty more coming up on Extension 27. I just said 720 too many times. Whatever. You can never get it up enough in radio. We'll be back after this. Extension 720. John Hanson in for Justin Kaufman for another hour and 12 minutes or so. So happy to be joined by Roberta Gennaro, who is a lively, wonderful, smiling personality. That's what I need here as we start to go down the home stretch of the show. How are you doing, Roberta?
I'm doing great. How are you, John?
You know, I'm really good, and there's nothing more important, I think, than the topic of the stuff that we put in our bodies. And I'm happy to hear that you are here on WGNRadio.com with Vivian. And tell us a little bit about your podcast.
Okay, so we started Figure Facts for Life, a podcast in National Nutrition Month, because I thought, you know what? What better month than to start talking about
and which month
nutrition.
Is that? Is that April or no? That was
That's,
you started.
So March is National Nutrition Month. Thank you. And so we started right at the beginning of March, and I'll tell you it's a passion of mine. I've been a dietitian for over 30 years. I ran the outpatient nutrition clinic at Rush Medical Center for over a decade. And then I went into private practice and I started my own company, Figure Facts LLC. One of the main things I wanted to do was really help people to understand how not to diet, but really understand how to fuel their body and choose foods that actually help to ward off disease and infection and manage weight as well.
Mm-hmm. And they all kind of go together, I imagine.
Absolutely.
I think that you mentioned the diet thing. Man, there is nothing Americans love more than the latest fad diet. And we love to follow it. Is it because things that are written down and rules and guidelines and do this, don't do that are easy to follow, and then it's easy to become, I don't know if addicted to it is the right word, but oh, that makes sense. I'm going to do it, and that makes more sense than trying to learn the comprehensive facts about all the food that we put in our body.
Right. I think that, I don't know what it is about the fad diet thing, but my mantra is I would much rather choose to live it than diet. Because the word die isn't diet.
Right.
And nice so one. You die to your favorite foods, right? And you die to really being able to navigate social events with family and friends because you've got all these rules and guidelines set up for yourself.
Restrictions, yeah.
Restrictions. And you also eliminate many times food groups that the body really needs.
Well, carbohydrates is the first one that comes to mind.
Number one.
Yeah, I mean, that's the one that everyone's like, nah, we're with the carbs.
No, exactly. It's so, and it's really scary to me because I actually had a friend of mine, Amy Jacobson, who's a trainer on, and she says these, you know, individuals who are following like the keto diet, or even like the Atkins, just really high protein, very low carb meal plans are crashing and burning in the gym. You know, they're getting cramps, their energy isn't there. And the reason for that is, John, that the number one energy source for our bodies has always been carbohydrates.
It's because, not to put words in your mouth, but I imagine people look at the number on the scale and maybe keto for whatever reason, whatever food they cut out, maybe they cut out a carbohydrate that was a bad one and they think, oh, that number went down. Yes. That's the end all be all. But it isn't.
Well, and just the numbers going down, you know, anybody could lose weight, but it's really about getting the weight off and keeping it off. And so the way I teach my clients through my private practice to eat is, you know, I take a look at what they're doing and then I don't change everything.
Mm-hmm.
I just say, hey, this is really great what you're doing. And then there's some things that we need to fill in because you're not getting enough phytonutrients through fruits and vegetables. You're not drinking enough water on a regular basis. And as adults, I don't know if you know this, but
I probably don't. I'm just going to go on a limb here.
The number one problem in nursing homes is dehydration. Why? Wow. Because as we get older, our thirst mechanism is confused for hunger.
Really?
So as adults, we tend to go for food. We think we're still hungry when actually our body is signaling thirst. But with children, when they say I'm thirsty, you can't give them something to eat.
Is that a biological genetic thing that was carried over from caveman days to make sure that we continue to eat healthy, or not healthy, but eat enough food throughout the day? Or do we not know why that mechanism switches as we get older?
That's a good question.
I'm not quite sure why it is.
Yeah.
And maybe because food does satisfy, let me tell you, especially carbohydrates, on a biochemical level, when you eat carbohydrates, they break to carbon dioxide and water. So carbohydrates do yield water in the system.
Basically, I just brought someone on to tell me that I can continue to eat my carbs. But like everything.
But not overeat
but
them.
That's the thing. It's
portion control.
Portion control.
And
absolutely.
Everything in moderation and the right ones. Yes. I wanted to talk about carbs just a little bit more because you mentioned that that it is the number one
energy
source.
Yes.
And when people cut that out, you mentioned that they're cutting out their ability at the gym. Even people that don't work, I imagine mentally that is a huge drain on them when they're losing that focus, that energy, when they don't have that brain fuel, in quotes.
Exactly. Yes. And we have natural brain waves slowing around 2 PM. And so with that, what I usually suggest is the meal midday is not super high in carbohydrates. Mm-hmm. Maybe you're having a sandwich, but you're having some vegetables with it. The fibers help for the meal to release from the stomach slower and help you get kind of a steady stream of energy. But that maybe if you want to sleep well at night, that's where you can have a nice pasta dish with, again, some vegetables. I'm always recommending vegetables at the meal,
right.
Fruits in between. It's just a really good pattern.
I imagine there's so many myths out there that you've heard and, you know, you've studied and you've advised against. I've heard, you know, the one, what is it, eat breakfast like a king, eat lunch something, and a dinner like a pauper. Do you believe that?
Well, let me tell you, my grandmother was from Sicily, and that was kind of the thing they did.
Right.
You know, they have a big breakfast, or sometimes not such a big breakfast, but they definitely close down the shop.
Yes.
In Italy, right?
I lived there for 9 months, and you couldn't find an open building around between 11:30 to 1:30 p.m.
Exactly.
Una pausa.
Right?
Yeah.
And so they eat a dinner-sized meal in the afternoon and then kind of a lunch-sized meal in the evening.
I guess it's for what works for you in that way while still fitting with what can be done in moderation.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that when it comes to normal physical hunger, it occurs every 3 to 4 hours in an adult. And in children, you know, it's every couple of hours, 2 to 3 hours. So when you think about feeling the best you can feel throughout the day and kind of a sustained energy level,
mm-hmm.
which some people are trying to do with caffeine.
Yeah.
It's just not
guilty in the morning, for sure.
Guilty all day.
Yeah, there's
guilty
no
all day.
Nutrient need for caffeine. But when you space your meals and snacks about 3 to 4 hours apart, you will have a sustained energy level through the day. It does matter, though, the composition of those meals.
Right.
So a little bit of protein at the meal, a little bit of fiber, also phytonutrients to kind of ward off disease and infection need to be at each meal and each snack.
Yeah, because intermittent fasting is a thing that people talk about now, skipping a meal just to make themselves feel better at that calorie count.
Right.
Advise against all that?
You know, to be honest with you, I'm not opposed to intermittent fasting. It has helped some people with type 2 diabetes or who really struggle with their weight.
Okay.
So it seems to bring the fasting insulin levels down and helps with mobilization of fat. However, I'm not about skipping meals. So if your first meal in the day is going to be at 11 or noon,
mm-hmm.
then you're having your next meal at 3, your next meal at 6, and maybe that last snack, you know, around 9.
It's interesting. We all, especially here in this building, we have very strange hours.
I know.
Yeah,
and
I work on the TV side. I'm up at 3:30 every morning. And I'm not a hungry person in the morning. I never have been.
Same here. I was telling her this morning. I was like, I'm not a breakfast person.
But right. I have a banana on my drive to work every day. I kind of force myself to get it going. But then, like, I'll go 8 or 9 hours until lunch. Should
Same.
I be working in something?
Yes.
Maybe after the show at 8 o'clock to try and start.
So let me tell you something. Overnight is when your body goes into this fasted state. So in order to turn your engine on,
mm-hmm.
like you turn your car engine on,
right.
people say, oh, my metabolism is sluggish. That's why I'm overweight. No, you may not be turning your engine on until 1 p.m. in the afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you turned it on at 9, even, you'd get that additional revving of your body's engine. And metabolically, just by adding that one meal in the day, you may see the scale drop.
Interesting. Yeah,
right?
it's about that time and getting it going. Okay.
So I actually brought a little treat for you,
John. I was just going to say, what is this bag?
And
is
for it, Vivian.
Is it a bunch of chips?
I am so excited. Is it food? Because I'm starving.
No, but actually, so I was telling Vivian, of all places, I was at
Whole Foods, let me guess.
At TJ Maxx.
I was at TJ Maxx.
Home Goods sells these as you're checking out. And it's Orchard Valley. I give a shout out to Orchard Valley.
Okay.
Heart healthy blend.
Tell you what, I'm going to take a few bites. We got to take a quick commercial break.
Okay.
And then we're going to do the news, but you're sticking with us.
Okay.
We already have some comments and some questions coming in, including a few scary ones about keto.
Oh, no.
about keto.
Okay.
Yeah. So
okay.
We'll talk more about that. 312-981-7200. Get your questions in for Roberta. And we'll take a quick break in the news after this on 720. WGN, having a great conversation off the air with the wonderful Roberta Gennaro. How you doing, Roberta? You feeling good?
I'm feeling really good, John. I'm so happy to be here.
This is cool. And, you know, we're getting a lot of questions and comments. Had someone ask about intermittent fasting. We talked about that for type 2 diabetes or if you need some weight loss, but otherwise don't skip meals.
I don't recommend skipping meals. And just delaying your first meal of the day, just from that point when you do take the meal in, you want to space out your meals and snacks about every 3 to 4 hours from that point on.
We had someone text in, I tried keto and I passed out at work. I mean,
oh,
really.
That's not good.
I mean,
you know, right? There you go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have muscles in our body that hold roughly around 1,400 calories of energy.
Mm-hmm.
The heart, your muscles, your brain all require glycogen.
Right.
Okay, glucose stored in the muscles to operate. So you have a lot of voluntary, involuntary things happening in the body, mm-hmm. right? So things you can kind of control, but breathing 24/7, your heart beating 24/7, that's not in your control.
No, those are burning calories.
Those are burning calories.
They need the calories to burn.
Actually, did you know the science behind the calories? Think about this. Let's say your doctor tells you you need about 2,000 calories in your day.
Okay.
Half of that energy, about 1,000 calories, is used just to move sodium and potassium in and out of the cells so that by doing that, then the proteins and the carbs and the fats are moving into the cells.
Well, can't that do twice as fast and burn more calories? That would be really, then I wouldn't have to run.
That'll be helpful.
But think about that. Because there's some people out there following, you know, I'm going to eat 1,000 calories today, and you're going to shut your metabolism down doing that.
Wow. And then they go work out.
Exactly.
Yeah,
and then they
dangerous.
Pass out.
Right. Yeah, at work.
Right.
You're going to get fired quick. Trust me, I played that game before. We were talking off the air about different, you know, in America, I don't know if it's because we're just so rushed and who we are as a culture and we're workaholics and whatever it is.
Yes.
Food in, goes down, we're done.
Yes.
But other cultures take time to enjoy the art of mastication. And I didn't say a dirty word. It's mastication. Chewing.
Chewing. Yes.
And do you feel that's
chewing.
True?
Yes. I totally do. You know, it's one thing if you only have 10 minutes to eat a meal, and if you don't eat it in that 10 minutes, you're not going to be able to eat for another 4 or 5 hours, then take that 10 minutes and eat your meal. Under normal circumstances, it's better to just take your time, enjoy, and savor your food. I also recommend sometimes for people, like if they, gosh, when I'm, you know, stacked with patients, and I may say, oh, I'm going to eat half of my sandwich now and some veggies, and then at my snack, I'll eat the other half and a piece of fruit. So sometimes you have to distribute,
space
it out a little bit, but don't skip meals.
Right.
Don't skip them.
I had a text. I knew we'd get something like this, and this is not at all judgmental to the person who texted on in, and I want to answer that question in that way. Mm-hmm. From the 312, my daughter has lost over 50 pounds on keto. She eats veggies that she never ate before, plus she works two jobs. I mentioned that for some people, look, there are certain things about diets, even fad diets, that can be great and can start a new culture of eating.
Correct.
But look, as someone, I tried the Atkins thing when it was crazy.
Right.
I lost 40 pounds. You know how quickly I gained it back
exactly.
once I reverted a little bit off it or realized that I needed something? I mean, and not saying that this woman and her or man and their daughter is going to happen to them.
Right.
But just people need to be aware of the limitations and the dangers of these sorts of diets before they jump into them, while also recognizing, there might be some benefits to some of the prescribed parts of the diet.
Right. Well, I would definitely say if somebody has 50 to 100 pounds to lose, you're better off getting that weight down for your overall physical health.
Mm-hmm.
However, if you're working out, you have a high-stress job, there's, you know, increase of calming neurotransmitters in the brain that happen when you have some carbs in your diet. So now she's 50 pounds down. I don't know if that's her goal.
Right.
But what I would say is, you know what? Start incorporating maybe some starchy vegetables, some peas, some corn, some legumes in, you know, half cup portion at a meal, and just bring it in gradually.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll see how your body responds and what happens with your energy level as well. I think, you know, when you look at somebody who's gained 50 to 100 pounds, they didn't do that by eating corn or peas.
So
there's a lot of vegetables out there, and even fruits now, like the banana or, you know, the starchy vegetables and beans, where people say, oh, that's going to be fattening. But I'll tell you this. I have a story. I had a client that was eating like a hot fudge sundae every night. And I said to her, you know what? What's your favorite starchy vegetable?
Mm-hmm.
She said, I love succotash. Lima beans with, you know, and some corn, I think it is.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, okay, go get yourself like the 10-ounce package.
The big one.
Which I know is like, you know, 300 or so calories.
Mm-hmm.
And just she put a little olive oil on it, which is good for your brain. And started dropping like a pound a week just
from that.
Just that
one change.
And she was eating starchy vegetables, which again, there's people out there that think that that's going to make you fat somehow.
Right. Yeah, and I really appreciate you just speaking that knowledge to people, because I think that, and this is, and we're in a judgment-free zone, by the way.
Absolutely, judgment-free. Like, totally look, judgment-free. I'm all about helping people.
Yeah, and I was 250-some pounds as a high schooler into college, okay. Eating all the wrong things.
Were you a football player?
No. My brother
you should have been.
My brothers were all-state collegiate athletes.
Okay.
And so the kitchen was stacked with things for them because they were burning so many calories.
Right.
I was in the plays, which takes energy, not as much energy.
It's a different energy.
Yes. I'll never forget. This is so embarrassing. I'm a lot better now, and I lost a lot of that weight and sort of yo-yoed back and forth. But I think I'm in probably the best overall physical shape of my life, balancing cardiovascular and relatively balanced meals. Always could do better. But anyways, I was eating out of the fridge just slices of American cheese.
Oh, my God.
Because I was like, cheese comes from cows. Healthy. My younger brother, who was 6 years younger than me, was like, have you ever looked at the he was like 12 years old.
Oh, my goodness.
He's like, have you ever looked at the nutritional value of a slice of cheese?
Yeah.
And, all I'm saying is, everyone has an eye-opening experience. It doesn't matter what point it comes in your life, and everyone can do a little bit better. We have a call. So, Roberta, you want to put on the headphones so you're able to hear the call?
Absolutely.
And again, we're talking Roberta Gennaro, Figure Fact for Life on WGNRadio.com. We're going to go to the phone lines. And Ann, you're on Extension 720. Ann, thanks so much for calling today.
Thank you.
All right. Do you have a question?
I have a question. Yeah. I have always heard, or I should say I read a book long ago, that you should never eat fruit with protein and carbs.
Never eat
fruit.
Fruit
should be eaten alone because it digests much faster than the protein and carbs. Is that true?
Okay, so I have a master's in nutrition and medical dietetics, and I will tell you that that has never been something that we've been taught to relay to our clients. And oftentimes, because summertime is coming and now we're going to be getting into some really great fruits, some berries, some melons and that kind of thing, I have clients that will swap out their carbs for a fruit serving because they just want to really enjoy like that juicy plum with their meal.
No, but eat them together at the same meal.
No, it's absolutely not an issue.
You can eat them together.
You can eat them together. Absolutely, you can eat them together.
But, Anne, I think you bring up a really good point. And, you know, for all we know, and you said you read this book a while ago, right?
Yeah.
Yes, it was very popular, and it was because the fruit is digested much faster.
And
when you mix it up with protein and carbs, it messes up the digestive system.
Actually, so I think if I'm remembering where that theory came from, it was actually looking at the glycemic response of a food or how fast a food breaks to glucose or glycogen in the system or glucose in the system. So basically what you have to understand is when you eat a meal and it's a mixed meal in the stomach, fibers leave the stomach slower. So if you're eating the fruit with the skin on it or it's berries, which are very high in fiber, it's going to release slower. Uh-huh. Also, fats release a little bit slower as well. It's when you're drinking juices, which I don't recommend, fruit juices.
I heard that before.
Yeah.
So, but the mixed meal actually has a lower glycemic response than when you eat
separately. And we thanks for the call. We're going to move on here a little bit.
Okay.
But what I wanted to say to Ann also, too, and I imagine she's still listening, is the idea that, you know, digestive sciences go through changes and in different interpretations.
Yes.
The book someone might have read 20 years ago, things have really changed.
Very
advanced.
Much so. Yes. Absolutely.
I have another question from the 708. Have you ever read the book Eat Right for Your Type by Dr. Peter D'Adamo? The book states that each blood type thrives on different foods and should avoid others.
Yes.
That doesn't seem right to me, but what do I know? I don't have a doctor in front of my name or anything.
Right.
Have you ever heard that?
I absolutely have heard that. And, you know, I think people really need to listen to their body because our bodies will let us know if something is not agreeing with our system. And sometimes we eat it anyway, even though we're getting a rash or we feel extremely bloated after we eat a certain food because we just like it. where I think, you know, that's kind of where this theory came from. Okay. I don't prescribe to that.
Interesting. Someone said, you know, mentioning the food pyramid, and you had started to talk about different breakdowns, but during the break, you mentioned dividing, and I think that we had a change in how we did this nationally,
yes.
Whereas the food pyramid was very in vogue. But you described something a little bit different, more of a pie, but not like a nice dessert pie, but like the pie that you look at your plate vertically. Is that something that you talk us through that?
So oftentimes I'm recommending to clients when they plate their food to use a peace sign. First of all, you want to be peaceful when you approach a meal.
I like that.
That's cute. Mm-hmm. I like that.
You like that?
I like that. And
then you're good also, at your job, Roberta. You
thank
know what you're doing.
You just made me feel so bubbly.
I love that. Mm-hmm.
Ooh, bubbly. That sounds good. Where does that fit in? Anyway, that's my next question.
Well,
but you finish your thought. Yeah.
Okay. And then I also like to recommend that if you just drink a cup of water before the meal, then you'll get your system set up for the meal to come in. All your digestive juices will be flowing and you won't be putting food on a dehydrated system.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, and you're probably going to roll your eyes at this one. I'm not even going to look at you for your reaction, but I drink some Diet Coke. It's not as much as I used to do. Maybe one can a day. It is my... It just makes me feel really good. I'm sure there's some science behind it. Don't give me that.
I had to do it.
I'm not going
to
ask because it's one of those things I know it's not great, and I know why, and I think. And anyways,
yes.
Point is, I have no problem... taking a Diet Coke. For some reason, drinking 8 cups of water, like trying to make myself do it, just isn't as fun. I just don't do it as much. But we really need to focus on the water intake.
Oh, absolutely. There are so many people, the number one problem for them is dehydration. It's the reason that they're overeating. It's the reason their energy level is very low during the day. And it just makes sense. If you think about water, like... Oil is to your car engine. That's what water is to the human body. If you ended up in the ER, the first thing they do is put an IV in you and make sure that they rule out any
other things,
dehydration as the cause for some of the symptoms that are happening.
Interesting.
So it's super important. Does it have to be plain water? No. A lot of times I'm recommending for the phytonutrients that are in some of the teas that are out there in the market. Like green tea, if you're trying to lose some weight, I usually recommend 2 to 3 cups of a decaffeinated green tea in your day. You're kind of getting two things happening at the same time. You're hydrating your system, and you're also bathing your cells with antioxidants.
Interesting.
Which is going to help fight disease and infection in the body.
Okay, a question from someone pretty specific, but I know a lot of people have to deal with this, including some people in my family. I won't name names because they're listening. nothing wrong with this, but at 815, what about people without a gallbladder?
Okay.
I know a lot of people that might have had fattier diets or something, they have issues with their gallbladders. A lot of older women, not even older women, women in their 40s and 50s have to deal with gallbladder issues. Do diets change when something like that happens?
Well, actually, you want to watch some of the fats that you're, you know, ingesting and make sure that your meals are not excessive in fat. Some people experience some, you know, intestinal distress because they don't have that little gallbladder pouch to hold the bile acids they're dumping into the gut. So it can cause a little bit of an irritation. However, over the years, what my understanding is that your body actually creates a little pocket.
Really?
Yes, where the bile can sit. However, I think one of the most important things to mention is that before you go and get your gallbladder removed, go see a registered dietitian because there are foods that actually help to purge your gallbladder.
Wow.
What?
Yes.
I did not know that.
I know a lot of people don't know that.
Well, I think a lot of people, they're in an emergency situation where the doctor's like, we need to get this thing on out of there. But you're talking about before that step.
Before.
Yes.
If you're getting twinges of pain in your mid-back.
Yeah.
Call your local dietitian because there are foods. I'll give you some examples. Peppermint tea, grapefruit, artichokes.
Bad? Or just...
Purge the gallbladder.
Purge the gallbladder.
Purge the gallbladder.
You just blew my mind.
Now, why does the gallbladder back up like that? Because of dehydration. So sludge in the gallbladder, stones in your kidneys... These are byproducts of poor hydration. You ask any urologist, the number one thing they'll tell you is keep drinking that water.
Man,
keep that water going.
You just got me with kidney stones.
Right? And not only drink the water, but
Vivian,
put a little
I need 9 more cups of water, please.
Okay, give me one second. Let's go on break and I'll get you 5 cups of water.
Yeah, we do have to take a quick commercial break. After the break, something I've seen people doing around the office. A lot of people into it. Don't answer now. A little tease. Apple cider vinegar.
Ooh, that's
people
a good one.
People love that.
Yes.
After this on Extension 720 WGN. Okie dokie, a few more text line questions coming in. Oh, I should probably remind people who we are. I'm John Hansen, filling in for Justin Kaufman on Extension 720, just for another 34 minutes or so. And Roberta Gennaro, figure fact for life here on WGNRadio.com. And let's talk about apple cider vinegar.
Yes.
Yay or nay?
I'm all for it.
Okay.
I'm not so much for drinking it on an empty stomach.
Okay.
I'm about putting it on a salad.
Oh, okay.
You know, or if you wanted to, even into a smoothie. But
not to replace a meal.
Not to replace a meal. Absolutely not. And actually, it is good for the microbiome in the gut to have vinegars and, you know, like pickled type of foods, but not as part of a meal, not on an empty stomach. Because some people will experience intestinal distress and maybe even a little reflux on an empty stomach.
That's an issue for me. Although I gotta say, when I started cooking at home, eating earlier, eating better, my reflux went down like that.
Right?
Because there would be weeks, it'd be like every day, and it's like, oh, gee, I wonder what's wrong. And it's like, well, look at what I'm putting in my body before I go to bed.
Right. There's 4 things that contribute to reflux.
What are the most...
So, caffeine.
Okay. I don't have any after 10 a.m., so I think I'm good.
I do.
Alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Fried foods.
Yeah.
And spicy foods.
Well, sometimes I'd hit the ringer on all 4 of those. So
then you were.
That is when you call Roberta
De Niro.
You call her.
You know.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, this hurts.
Meal replacement shakes like Slim Fast.
Yes.
What do you think?
So, you know, when it comes to brand names, I hate to, you know, diss them, but I would say that if you're going to do kind of a meal replacement like that, I would still bring with you some vegetables and fresh fruit. Because if that's going to be mainly your protein contributor nowadays, it seems like they've really cut the carbs low in those drinks, that you need to supplement that with the fibers that are in fruits and vegetables and the antioxidants.
So a meal enhancer instead of a meal replacement, I guess you could say.
Yeah, you know, I was actually talking to your producer, Vivian, about the fact that sometimes when we're so crazed and we're so in a rush, that it's not a bad idea to maybe make a smoothie the night before or that morning.
Oh, for sure.
Take it with you. And maybe one is primarily like protein and fruits, and the other one is going to be like your greens, you know, or you can combine them.
By the way, when you're saying shake, you're not saying about juicing. You're leaving the pulp and you're grinding
you
it all up
together.
Oh, you leave
all the fibers in there, correct. Like a Nutribullet or something.
I find it fun. I do have one of those.
Okay.
Man, I just find the craziest things to throw on in there. Bananas, a little yogurt, a little bit of milk, and then I'll throw like half a bag of spinach in there.
Yes.
And I don't even taste the spinach. It tastes wonderful.
Right. And the
Isn't
other thing
great?
You can throw in there too are some things like cinnamon.
Oh, yeah. Or a little honey.
Turmeric. And a little bit of honey.
A
little bit, about a teaspoon of honey.
Right. Turmeric, interesting.
Turmeric and
I've
ginger.
I've been hearing that a lot.
These all help with decreasing inflammation in the body and just really help you feel good. So you could just start out with like a quarter teaspoon and go up to a half and see how you like the flavoring of that.
Mm-hmm.
But that's something that's really good to do. It's just better not to skip a meal than, you know, to have something with you.
Right.
And so that's kind of the key message.
We had a text from the 847. I think it's something that this texter brings up, the idea of this person just says, I take a little issue with the generalization about twinges on your back could be your gallbladder or just the food. I think you're saying that a nutritionist can be part of the solution. You're not going to ignore what your doctor's telling you.
Oh, absolutely.
Right.
We don't suggest you ignore your doctor's telling you. However, you know, you may, if that's kind of how it presents initially, it doesn't usually just go full-blown attack. There's usually little mini attacks that happen up to the big episode. So looking at the way you're hydrating your body could ward that off. Ingesting fruits and vegetables that help to purge the gallbladder can help. But absolutely, you know, if you're in like critical mode,
right?
There's really no option at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's what we're trying to avoid.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, we don't want you to get to that point.
Okay, really quickly, last two here. Yes. Keto veggies instead of French fries served with chicken. That sounds really good to me. In fact, this one comes with a picture of some asparagus, it looks like. Some other things. That sounds, maybe those are sweet potatoes. I don't know, little cherry tomatoes.
Okay.
That sounds great, right? You know, are we just missing one little
element? Let me tell you something. The one thing about keto or some of these diets is if it drives you to eat more fruits and vegetables.
Wonderful.
I'm all for it.
I think that texture was referring to that too, the idea of she's eating things that she's never eaten before.
Right. And so you may be opting to do that for a weight loss phase, but you better check in with a dietitian to help you then graduate the way you're eating to live it instead of diet,
because mm-hmm.
you don't want to keto it or diet for the rest of your life.
Amen. Roberta, where can we find out more information about what you do and podcasts and all that sort of
stuff?
Okay,
so the podcast is Figure Facts for Life here at WGN. And you know, you could go on the website, mm-hmm. WGNradio.com. You go to WGN Plus, click on Lifestyle, and you'll see Figure Facts for Life podcast there. We're also sharing, so if you would like to get on Facebook and follow us at Figure Facts LLC, all mm-hmm. one word, on Instagram and Facebook, and that way you'll be getting the announcements of the podcasts that are coming out. And also, we would love to hear from our listeners and viewers about things that they would like the subject matter of the podcast to be around. So
a little please. Interaction, yeah.
Yeah,
they can drive the content.
Absolutely. And I have a studio, a great studio.
Yeah, there
yes.
you go.
Where, you know,
yes, every
I
month,
may eventually
every other Monday.
Invite some people in as part of, you know, the program
mm-hmm.
to ask some questions and just experience the podcast live.
Thank you so much for stopping by. This was really cool.
Thank you so much for
and thanks for the
John.
Nuts or the health or the healthy blend.
Oh,
man,
Roberta,
if I had a nickel for every
amazing.
Way I
you're
end
amazing.
That interview that way. quick commercial break, then the news here on 720 WGN. I'm waking up. Extension 720 for another 20 minutes. John Hanson in for Justin Kaufman on this rather pleasant Wednesday night. Boy, today ended up being a gorgeous day. We got two good ones in a row. So that means what? We got nine bad ones? Is that how the math works on that?
Well,
yeah,
I didn't go too far ahead. 46 Friday,
mm-hmm.
And then for Easter Sunday, 65
yeah.
degrees and partly sunny. It's not bad.
Yeah, Saturday and Sunday's going to be
yeah,
good.
It's going to be totally fine. I actually was a tourist yesterday. I was down here for an interview in the morning, and
uh-huh.
then I had just a bunch of time to kill. I went to Millennium Park.
Oh, man.
I hung out by the Bean. It was just so nice to sit outside.
And it makes you kind of go, wow, we really do have a gorgeous city.
Oh, we do.
When you
I literally,
explore it.
I sat there and I said to myself, I love this city.
Yeah.
It's just so beautiful.
Mm-hmm. That's because you had so much time to kill. Andrea.
I know. Now I'm going to have some
the rest
time
of us
to
are
kill.
Like, oh, God, I had no time. No, I'm just kidding. No, you're going to, that's awesome. And yeah, exploring your own city sometimes is something that we take for granted. I love just taking nice long walks. I just moved to the Lakeview
yeah.
neighborhood from another neighborhood I loved. I lived in East Humboldt Park, West Ukrainian Village. Loved that area for 7 years. But man, it's just fun walking around. And oh, spring is here.
Oh, it is.
Summer's coming. We'll have fifth winter for a day or two again somewhere.
I know.
It'll happen. But it's Chicago. Think, that's what we get used to, right?
I think Friday, 46, and then we're back up to 55,
yeah.
65, 55. So we'll be okay, hopefully, next week.
As
that
long,
storm on Sunday was crazy.
As long as the temperature doesn't start with a T. No 20s or 30s.
Oh, exactly.
Fs are fine. Ss are better. But yeah. All right. I wanted to change gears entirely and wrap up the show with my good friend and movie critic, Blake Stubbs. Blake Stubbs, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing pretty well, John. I'm also enjoying this weather, by
yes.
the way.
Well, yeah,
is, for a guy who spends a lot of time in movie theaters, I am enjoying getting outside and not having to wear coats. It's
yeah.
fantastic.
Blockbuster Blake, you're on with me a bunch and also with Dane Neal. And Blake, obviously the movie that everyone's talking about coming out next week is the Avengers movie. But there was some kind of news about it today. They're starting a hashtag and a campaign to stop people spoiling the movie. Have there been leaks about this thing? Or is there information out there that people need to watch what sites they go to on the internet to prevent seeing the ending or something?
Yes. So apparently some footage has leaked. Now, I, as a good moviegoer, have not read anything further.
Mm-hmm.
I want to avoid this entirely. And
mm-hmm.
I want to remind people that, you know, if you're surfing, if you're a big Twitter person, if you're a surfer of Twitter, Facebook, et cetera, just be careful when you see something that clearly is Avengers-oriented. Because as of right now, a lot of the stuff I've been seeing are like warnings, you know,
mm-hmm.
to avoid it. But it definitely, this is a film with high stakes. You know, if you've been following, I mean, this is, I think, the 22nd Marvel film that will be coming out, and it's a culmination of a lot of big arcs, you know, story-wise, that people are invested in. So if you could not spoil it for other people, that would be wonderful. Myself included, I would really appreciate it.
Is it a finale? Is it wrapping up? Is it over? Is this the last one they're doing or something? Okay, because I'm so out of the loop on this.
I would hardly say it will be the last one they're doing. It will be the closing out of a phase. So the way the Marvel Cinematic Universe has worked is that they have built phases of certain orders of films that will be released. And in many cases, phases have come, you know, to like a bit of a of an end with an Avengers film. Now, Avengers Infinity War, which came out last year and, of course, had an ending that people were talking about for months. And some people who are maybe getting to that point where they want to revisit films are going to revisit that one in particular, and I would recommend they do that. This fall, we've had films be released. We've had Captain Marvel, which is a big one that I think people definitely should see before they see Endgame, the film that's coming out next week. And, you know, you've had quite a nice order in the way they deliver these films, because when a phase ends, they then move on to, like, telling new stories that involve, you know, some familiar faces and some new characters. That's how we got Guardians of the Galaxy well into the fact that they'd already made about 10 films. So they've been very good about organizing this and delivering it in such a way that if you started at the beginning now, you'd be able to, you know, finish everything off and be ready to go for Endgame. But honestly, I think there's only a few big ones you got to hit.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. So I can't even remember which ones I've seen. I know I've seen some. Like, I know I've gone to the theater and seen a one with Chris Pratt in it and, you know, a couple others along the way. Am I even in the right chain of movies?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
all right.
Absolutely.
So what are the four or five that, like, okay, it's coming out next weekend. What can I do to get prepared? Which ones do I need to watch, assuming I've either forgotten all of them or only, you know, watched sporadic ones here or there?
My personal picks, two of them I just mentioned. One, Avengers Infinity War.
Okay.
It's the film that came out last year. It's the first part of this two-part Avengers story.
So that's a must.
Endgame is the finale of that. Yeah.
All right.
That's a must. The next one is Captain Marvel. Brie Larson, you know, the movie's hit $1 billion. I enjoyed it very much. I thought the action was excellent. I think the introduction of her character, she's going to have a massive part to play in Endgame. So really having a good sense of what she's capable of, her origins, who she is important, I think, for viewers that are getting amped up to see this movie next week.
Okay.
Now, those are the two that I've already mentioned, but I would definitely mention Thor Ragnarok.
Thor Ragnarok. Okay.
Yeah, that is on Netflix. I believe you can watch that. It's very funny. You will be surprised at how funny it is if you've been living under a rock and you've never seen Ragnarok. However, it was also sort of a reinvention of the Thor character. And I think the way that they've taken this character in all the directions they've gone, especially with that film, one, it's immensely enjoyable. It's a complete reinvention. And I think that Thor going into Endgame is going to be important to know and understand.
Is that Christopher is that Hemsworth as Thor?
That is Hemsworth.
I'm
yes.
in.
Yes.
In. Check.
Yeah. And I think, John, I think you'll laugh out loud a lot more than you expect to when you watch that movie. The other two that I think are very important, Captain America, the First Avenger. I think that there's a lot to be said about the character of Steve Rogers in that film. And it's been about 8 years since that release. Watch that film so that you really know who Steve Rogers is, where he comes from, what he's about, what he's willing to do. Because in the trailers we've seen here, I think that it kind of tees us up to see Captain America and everything that he was meant to be in Endgame.
I actually saw Captain America, and guess what, Blake? I know I saw it at the Gibson City Drive-In.
Whoa! Yes. And now, if you can see a movie in a drive-in, folks.
Well, they just unfortunately they're shutting down the one here in the West Chicago suburbs. I know it's terrible, but I know of the Harvest Moon Drive-In still at the Gibson City. They had a big effort a couple years ago to save the two screens because they were converting everything to digital, and they were able to do it. And I've been there a couple years since. From Chicago, man, that's going to be a two-hour drive, hour 45 probably. But you get a double featuring, go early in the day, make a whole day out of it. There is nothing better than on a summer day watching. And they got good. They got the new releases and everything. Man, there's something about watching. I try and go every summer once down to Harvest Moon in Gibson City. Man, there's nothing that beats that in the summer.
I would definitely say if you've never been to a drive-in, it is, I hate to say this, but it is one of those things that in the near future could be forgotten.
Right.
Or remembered, and only remembered. And I think that if you can take advantage of it and get out there and see it, do it. And there is one in Central Illinois. So I would highly recommend people check that out.
And then the last film, go ahead.
The last film is actually, this one might surprise people, but I think Iron Man 3.
Iron Man 3. The one, I've actually seen that one, too.
Yeah, so that's the one where Tony Stark spends less time in the suit than any other Iron Man film. But it's also the most introspective, I think, of the Iron Man films and gives us a sense of the growth that, you know, and it had a lot to do with Shane Black's script, I think, that helped usher in a new way of looking at Tony Stark. Mm-hmm. And the Tony Stark that we're seeing in these most recent films ever since Iron Man 3 has been a very interesting, you know, evolution of that character, especially from the very carefree, fun, you know, humor-intensive first two Iron Man films that I enjoyed. But I think Iron Man 3 might be a good one to go revisit just so that you're kind of primed and ready to see these characters. In some cases, they're saying it may be one last time. In some cases, it may not be. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But I would say that if I were to give you five, those would be the films I would push people to see, because maybe they can only watch one a night, or maybe they can only watch a couple.
Right.
Those are five big ones. And then if you want bonus points, if you're going to go all out, watch both of the two Ant-Man films, because I have a big, big feeling that all of the mumbo-jumbo, you know, the science and all the science fiction built into that, I think it's going to play a very big part in what's going to unfold in Avengers Endgame. And I think knowing Ant-Man and what he's capable of and what he can do with things like the quantum realm, et cetera, it's going to be very important. And so you're not confused.
Right.
But that's bonus points. Don't feel like you got to run out, although they are very funny films, and I highly recommend watching them.
His name is Blockbuster Blake. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and then we're going to be breaking down. I want to talk about, you know, we don't have much time afterwards, but talking about spoilers and stuff. How long can you wait until you spoil a movie? I had a friend once who did it in 4 minutes and in the worst way possible. I'll tell you about that next on Extension 720. No, I will not wait another minute. We got to get up with this show. 9:52 here on WGN. John Hansen in for Justin Kaufman on the last few minutes of Extension 720. Got a Blockbuster Blake on the line. Blake, what's the statute of limitations for ruining a movie for someone? Well, how many years you got to give it?
See, for me, if its theatrical release has ended, you're in a gray area. And if it's available on streaming, because in the last few years that's become the norm, if it's available on streaming, I think it's fair game.
But maybe ask that beforehand, like, hey, I might ruin something, is that okay?
Yeah.
That would just be proper form.
And I've made the mistake, I'm sure everybody out there has. However, today I was speaking to someone about a play I recently saw in New York this last weekend, and they hadn't seen the film it was based on, and I said, do you mind if I tell you something? And they were like, no, go ahead. So of course I told them. Wasn't going
to
divulge anything until they, you know, and the film, by the way, is like 40 years old.
You got to make sure it's a spoiler. Yeah, right. After 40 years, that's the thing. Hey, I'm going to go really quickly before we talk about the rest of spoilers. I know Andre's got a story. I got one too. Let's go to Craig. Craig, are you a fan of drive-in theaters?
You know, I am. I love them. You get two first-run movies for $12.
Yeah.
And you can bring in your own drink. You can bring in your own popcorn, whatever you want. Now, there is one up in McHenry. It's on Lincoln Highway in Chapel Hill. On April 26th, they're going to have Endgame and Captain Marvel.
Wow, that's awesome.
Ooh.
Now, Craig, have you ever hidden in a trunk? Or no, are you never? You don't advocate that, right?
You know what? I've usually been the driver. I've had other people hide in the trunk.
Yeah, I know. That's like a rite of passage for drive-ins. I know it hurts their business. Everyone pay your ticket. Make sure those drive-ins last. Small kids in the back.
The other thing about this theater is 2 years ago, Sony gave them a new projector.
Oh, wow.
So you can show the digital. And it's a huge difference.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, so I highly recommend it just driving, guys.
Thank you. Craig, I appreciate the phone call. I hadn't known about the one at McHenry. All right, so Blake, I'm going to tell you the story of the worst spoiler ever. This movie is 20 years old, so I'm really sorry if I spoil it for you. But it was spoiled for me before I even went into the theater. So 1999, no Twitter, no Facebook at the time, nothing like that. I am in line on opening night to see The Sixth Sense.
Oh,
and
no.
There is a line of 500 people waiting to go in the theater. Out prances my friend Scott Deedy, who this is how I know him and remember him, to every person in the 500-person line, walks down and screams, he's dead the whole time.
Oh, no.
Oh, are you kidding?
And we're all about to, I mean, we're teenagers, so he's just being a punk 14-year-old. Oh, and because then that's like something so obvious that then the moment Bruce Willis comes on the film, you're like, I know. Like, that ruined that experience. It ruined that
that's
reveal.
That's awful.
That could be the ultimate spoiler.
Yeah, that was bad.
The ultimate spoiler.
And I got to add to this. I have one movie open on IMDb right now on my screen in front of me. John and I are not in the same place. We are old friends. I want full disclosure on this. But we didn't know each other in 1999. This is the exact same movie I was going to say.
This
is the movie that I knew about it before I saw it.
No.
And of course,
wow.
I was 14 years old, but I was a movie lover. And somebody had spoiled this for me before I even had a chance to see it.
Ugh.
And here's the thing. Never saw it in a theater.
Yeah.
I've seen it.
God.
I enjoy the film. But it was spoiled and I knew it had been released, like the info, I was like, well, what's the point now?
Right.
You know, you ruined the whole thing. Now that, be very careful.
Yeah.
Be delicate with that.
Well, that was obviously intentional. There was no delicacy for that. Hey, Andrea, we're running a little out of time. Your mom's an accidental spoiler.
Oh, my God. My mom and Judy Pylak spoiled the same movie for me. You guys will totally get this. Back when The Perfect Storm came out, you know, Clooney.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God. Yep. And I was dying to see this movie. It was action adventure. It was Clooney, and Judy Pylak said to me, and I don't think I'm spoiling anything, the movie's what, 20 years old,
right?
Judy said, why do you want to see it? They all die.
Oh my god.
And I told my mom, and I said, can you believe Judy spoiled it? My mom, I love her, but she does the same thing. She's like, well, yeah. She's like, you know that. They died. It's a true story. And I went, okay, I know it's a true story, but I didn't know about it. I didn't know the ending.
Same thing happened to me for Titanic. I had no idea that's how that ended. No.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
No.
Hey, Blockbuster Blake, thanks for jumping on with us. We appreciate it, okay?
Thank you. Pleasure as always.
And
have a great night.
The Avengers is next Saturday, or next Friday. Thursday? When does it get released?
Thursday is the hot day. Go Thursday if you can.
Blockbuster Blake, thanks so much. We'll wrap things up on Extension 720 next on WGN. That'll do it for Extension 720. My good friend Patty Vasquez, how you doing?
I'm great. I'm trying to think of other movies I could maybe ruin for
you. Yeah, let's ruin them all right here and now.
I actually want to watch like 50 hours of Avengers movies with you as well. It's okay.
Yeah, all 50, please.
I agree with that list he gave you, by the way.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Because I don't know. I just let Blake talk. He could be spewing garbage. I have no idea.
Although, I would say both Captain America movies.
Okay.
Both the origin story and the Winter Soldier. Carry on.
There's some very attractive men in those movies, I've noticed.
I'm saying for that reason, yes.
I'm sure women, too.
Yeah.
I'm not the expert on that. And that's how we're going to end it.
I appreciate it greatly.
Vivian, thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure.
It has been. Thanks, everyone, for listening. I appreciate it.